Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Peg, Carl, and their kids spilled out of the family car at 6 p.m. and scattered through the house. Peg to make dinner, Carl to sort out the mail and go through the bills, and the three kids to begin their schoolwork. Tricia, age 8, was downstairs in a jiffy. "Daddy," she pleaded, "my arithmetic homework is too hard. Can you please help me?" "In a minute, sweetie," he replied. "I've got to do these bills first and then make some important phone calls." Tricia sat down on the steps nearby to wait. "Mom," bellowed Daryl, age 12, from the upstairs hall. "I've got this report to do on the rainforest. Where's the stuff I can use?" "We'll deal with it later," Peg called back. "I'm making dinner now." "Can you look at this story?" Bart, age 10, appeared beside the stove with a crumpled piece of paper and a pencil in his hands. "It's due tomorrow." "Good grief," Peg replied. "Can't you see I'm busy now? Please set the table and take your jacket off the floor." Sound like a familiar evening? From a parent's perspective, how can busy parents make time for their children's needs? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are delighted to have with us two world-famous experts on children's needs and how to meet them. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan are the authors of a new book, The Irreducible Needs of Children, What Every Child Must Have to Grow, Learn, and Flourish. But each is world-famous in his own right. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, pediatrician and parent advocate, is clinical professor of pediatrics emeritus at Harvard Medical School and professor of psychiatry and human development at Brown University. In 1972, he established the Child Development Unit, a pediatric training and research center at Children's Hospital in Boston, where he continues his clinical, teaching, and research activities. In 1993, he founded the Touch Points Project, a preventive outreach program which trains professionals nationwide to better serve families of infants and toddlers. Because of his concern for the stresses families face, he has appeared before congressional committees in support of parental and medical leave bills. Dr. Brazelton has also written a number of other books, including Infants and Mothers, Crisis and Caring, and Touch Points. He is the father of 4 grown children and grandfather of 6. We are glad you could join us.
Oh, it's fun to be with you, Linda.
Thanks.
To hear you, Sandy.
Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, noted psychiatrist, is clinical professor of psychiatry, behavioral science, and pediatrics at George Washington University Medical School and a practicing child psychiatrist. Founder of 0-3, National Center for Infants, Toddlers, and Families, Dr. Greenspan is also former director of the National Institute of Mental Health's Clinical Infant Development Program and Mental Health Study Center. He has been a presidential advisor on child care and has also testified before Congress on behalf of family issues, including developmental and learning disorders. Dr. Greenspan has also written and edited many books, which include Playground Politics, The Challenging Child, and Building Healthy Minds. He's a regular guest on national television programs. We're so glad to have you with us, Dr. Greenspan.
Nice to be here with you.
First, we want to ask you, what led you to write The Irreducible Needs of Children?
Well, I think we wanted to get families and children to the forefront of our thinking in this country. This was my motive, and Stan and I had been working together off and on for a long time, so it seemed a timely thing to do.
We both felt from many conversations together that we're going in the wrong direction in this country, that we're moving towards more impersonal kinds of care for kids in all ways, in educational settings, in family settings, and that long term, that's going to undermine both intellectual development and emotional development, and that a lot of the basics that we need for healthy growth were just not there anymore, and it's getting worse rather than better. So we felt we needed a kind of call to arms and needed to say some things rather directly that weren't being said.
I think those empty faces of the kids that created those terrible situations like Colorado and all motivated me to feel like we can't wait any longer. So I think the emptiness in their faces, if you go back to them, were really what was so scary.
What would you say are the unmet needs of children that you're talking about?
I think the key one is for nurturing care. I think that's the first irreducible need of the 7 that we discuss. And that's the need to have somebody who's with you a large part of the day who's devoted to you, but who also knows how to read your signals, is down on the floor playing games with you, is teaching you new things, but is doing it in a very nurturing, interactive way with his zillions of back and forth emotional signals all the time. And you can see a tuned in person. If you ever watch a loving parent and their toddler, you see that beyond the toddler's doing something that looks impressive or saying a word that's impressive, you see that back and forth emotional gesturing, that rich repertoire of interaction. And that's the piece we're losing because we're putting our kids in front of the TV screen or the computer screen. We're letting them spend too much time alone. And we're giving them interactions, little piecemeal, 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there, while we're rushing around doing things. Those long, nurturing interactions, they build self-esteem, they build capacity to trust, and they also build our intelligence. Our ability to think comes from the way we interact with others. So that's, I think, the biggest missing piece and the thing we need to urge.
I have a little different slant. I think most parents enter the parent-infant relationship with passion. And the passion that says, I want to do the best I can for this child. And somewhere along the way, it's getting lost. And I don't think it's the parents' fault as much as the fact that they don't have enough supports to match the increased stresses on them. I have 10 stresses that I've identified as I go around the country talking to parents about what they're going through these days. And the stresses on parents are out of proportion to their ability to meet them. Now, I think if we're going to ask them to do these things that we've asked them to do in this book, we've also got to somewhere beg for the supports that they need in order to be free enough to do them. And I think that what we'll find is just this overwhelming response from parents. They are dying for this sort of thing. So this was part of my motivation to protect parents as well as the child.
Dr. Brazelton, would you identify some of those stresses for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The major one, I think, is the loneliness that parents feel today. They don't feel like they're part of a community. Most of them don't live near their own parents. They don't see much of their peers, or if they do, it's in a workplace, not, you know, to borrow a cup of sugar or to get a babysitter. And the loneliness is a frightening thing when you're in trouble with a child. It's okay while things are going all right. The next thing that I think is the most critical is that we split women in two, and we haven't given them a chance to put themselves back together, or because women at home are just as conflicted as women in the workforce, or we haven't supported them in the two roles that we provided for them and pushed them into in a way. And as we split men in two, I think we're going to do the same thing to them. Make them feel inadequate, hopeless, helpless, all of the things that I think women are feeling right now, angry. And so these two are the major things. I think there are many others, like the effects of television and the media on competing for our children, the effects of our having treated diversity as a negative rather than something that is positive for our whole culture, and its effect on diverse people. I could go on, but there are lots of these lack of values. As I go around the country, parents are frightened as heck about raising their children to money, power, war, aggression. It gives them the creeps, and they think this is what our country stands for, and they so far haven't reached back into their own past to pull out religion, the values that their families offered them, things like that. And, you know, they're right there. We have solutions to all of these, but we just aren't motivated to use them.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about what every child needs.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, authors of The Irreducible Needs of Children, about what every child needs to have.
What's your view of the amount of time American parents manage to spend interacting with their children?
We think it's too little. In the Irreducible Needs book, we recommend that for babies and toddlers, for example, about two-thirds of the available time should be some type of interaction, often divided between two types. One, playing games and having fun, being down on the floor, playing funny face kinds of games and making sounds at each other. And another type, which is very easy for parents to do, but they haven't realized how important it is to bring the preschooler with you when you go shopping, and they can help you take the cans off the shelf, or they can help you by handing you the wash as you're putting the machine. And we call this kind of facilitating interactions, because while you're getting a chore done, you're actually helping little Johnny or Susie learn about the world. And all you have to do is not be in a hurry. So if you're not looking at little Johnny and Susie and just putting your stuff in the washing machine, sure, not much is happening. But if you go, oh, can you get me that one over there? No, 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 not that one, that one. And as they get a little older, I want the green one now and the blue one. So kids can learn about colors. They can learn about shapes. They can learn about being helpers all at the same time while you're getting your wash done. But it'll take you an extra half hour to do the wash. Mm-hmm. But we call that facilitating interactions. And if we could spend most of our time with the direct playful interactions and the facilitating interactions, and less time with kids alone in front of the screens, less time in front of the TV set, less time in front of the computer, we'll have kids who feel good about themselves and who are better learners.
I think we've got to create the pressure on parents to say, look, I can make choices, and I've got to make these choices for their own sakes as well as for the children.
For stressed-out parents, is there sort of a minimum time? In other words, for them, they're hearing this and they're thinking, okay, this is a great idea. How much time do I need to put aside? And is it different for my toddler than it is for my sixth grader? Is there any kind of help that you can provide with that?
During the available time, which means from morning till evening, see how many hours there are and ask yourself the question, is my baby spending more than a third of that time on their own, sitting in a playpen, staring at a TV screen? If that's happening, we say thumbs down. You know, that's not optimal. On the other hand, am I, as a loved caregiver, or my husband, or my mother and grandmother, you know, or Aunt Tilly who's living with us, but is there a loved caregiver who's part of this child's life, who will be part of the child's life for years to come, not someone who's going to be there for 6 months or a year and then gone? But is there somebody else who's working with me, spending this awake time interactively? If the answer is yes to that, and two-thirds of the time is spent interactively or more, that's a great thing. Now, if you are busy and you're a single parent putting food on the table, then use that evening time wisely. Your child will grow up to understand that you were doing the best you could under the circumstances. Keep the TV off. Have your baby be the partner when you cook. Let him help you with his pots and pans. So make good use of that evening time and do the best you can.
It's not just the time, it's what you do with that time. There is a kind of time that Ellen Galinsky talks about in her book called just hanging out time. And I think her revelation that children really miss that in busy working families was a revelation to me, because I think hanging out time may be what kids would rather have than planned time or exciting time. Because so much comes to the surface and so much is shared at a time like that.
How is a child's ability to understand verbal and nonverbal cues affected by spending the bulk of her day with a caregiver?
Our research shows that by 6 to 8 weeks, a baby has already set up a behavioral system that is absolutely predictable for the mother and for the father. And you can tell them by watching a finger or a toe or mouth or eyes who this baby is interacting with. And so by 6 to 8 weeks, the cognitive base for understanding what this person's going to bring to them is already there. Now, that doesn't take time, but it takes every time you look at a baby or diaper the baby or feed the baby, you look down and you say, how are you doing? And when she responds to you, say, that's right. And meanwhile, she's learning to give you back the responses that she's incorporating into this system. And the same thing goes on with the father. He comes in, he sits down, and he starts poking his baby. So the baby goes, whoo, and he does it 3 or 4 times every time. Now, that baby knows that this father is going to play with him, and it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be a whole other world. And so it may take attention and passion, but I'm not sure the amount of time is really what's at stake. I think that as long as you take each opportunity as a chance to communicate, that it may be more important to point out that than it is length of time.
We won't get real good at it unless you're doing it enough of the time.
You've got to practice.
You got to be in there.
Practice cooing back.
You got to read your baby. Right. You got to get to know your baby. You got to log the hours to do that. But let's look at why this nonverbal system, this gesture to gesture, smile to smile, frown to frown kind of signaling is so important, because it's easy to ignore it and just worry about when a baby says their first words or when they learn to read and forget the importance of reciprocal back and forth gesturing and interacting. Through this system, the baby learns to feel secure because it's in the expectation that gets met. The smile leads to a smile that your sense of security comes. The world becomes a lawful place. Through that, the baby learns to love because their happiness gets responded to with a happy smile back, and their pleasure gets responded to with pleasure back, and now there's pleasure. They also learn limit setting. The baby begins by 8-10 months to discriminate those different facial expressions that you have, and they begin regulating the behavior. Watch the baby push, look up, see what's going to happen, and then not push. Well, that makes it easy for that child at age 5 to want to throw the eraser and look up at the teacher, and she's going, as opposed to her having to come over and take the eraser from the hand. We worry about the kids who can't read the nonverbal signals. Well, one reason is they haven't had a lot of the nonverbal experiences. It also teaches you how to think, because when you do something as an 8-month-old, when you make a sound and you get a sound back, you're learning causality, learning cause and effect thinking. I can make something happen.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our talk about what every child needs.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, authors of The Irreducible Needs of Children, about what every child needs.
Our research shows that you don't learn to parent by your successes. You learn by your mistakes. And that half the time that you're interacting with a child, you're mismatching the child's cues and the child's learning processes. And that was a real revelation to me, that the mismatches are just as important as the matches in terms of learning how to parent. So I would say that if we could free parents up to feel supported, to give them the kind of backups that they need, that most parents are going to strive the hell out of it to do a good job. And I wouldn't want to put them under the pressure of time or doing it right or knowing exactly how to be a parent, any of those things, because I think in a way that could so easily interfere with this passion and this experimentation that I think it may take to do a good job of parenting. And I like to see parents try things out, fail, try something else out, fail, and then finally hit it right, and the child shows you by their behavior. This is where the behavioral cues become so important, because the second you do it right, that child lights up like a Christmas tree, and it's just so thrilling as a parent to see that happen, that I would think that the child could really lead the parent if they were free enough to watch and to observe and to learn the child's behavior. I call it the touch points, the times when the baby regresses just before they take a spurt, are such vulnerable times in a child's development and in a parent's development that I've realized that they are major opportunities for us from the outside to step in, give them an understanding of these times of regression, when the child reorganizes, gets ready for the next spurt, because then they feel, hey, I know what I'm doing. I'm really on track with this child. And I think to do that, you do need to have the support of a society around you. and of peers around you and of a decent child care system.
But in order to learn from our babies, we have to be engaged with them. We have to do what we call floor time, get down on the floor and be in a playful mode where you're receptive. What I think we need to emphasize is the learning process. There are really no rights and wrongs. I mean, you'll get it if you hang in there and work with the baby, but the process you're using is what strengthens that child's development. That's what the baby learns from. The baby then is learning problem solving, is learning communication, is learning interacting, is learning thinking. All the great things come from the negotiation. And I coach parents to deliberately play dumb with their toddlers and preschoolers to get
make
more
it work.
To make more of the interaction. Sure, when we have a child who's a little slow with language development or is gesturing, the gestural system is not coming in as quickly as we want to see it come in, we deliberately go into the kind of Columbo routine, you know, we act confused. Like, what was that? What? But in doing it, we're very animated and we're very engaged. So it's, oh boy, I want to know, but tell me. And we deliberately reach for the wrong toy and the child's going, well, which one is the green one or the blue one? I don't know. Blue, blue, blue. Oh, the blue one. Okay. And now the child with a language delay, within a few months, children who with language delays are beginning to make strides and saying their words because they have a powerful ally, which is their own affect or emotion, their own motivation that we've helped create by playing a little dumb and making it work. But we have to be very engaged when we do it. We can't do this. If we play dumb and we're not very engaged with them, they'll just throw a tantrum. But if we're really working with them, they'll take their time with us. They'll be a little more patient. And they'll try 6 or 7 more gestures so we get it. And then they'll be very proud when we do get it right.
All of that is what I was scared to death about. If I left home and somebody else had to take over communicating with my child basically all day, would somebody else pay as much attention as I would to every little gurgle or every little wiggle or whatever? And I didn't think anybody else would do it, so I couldn't leave.
Well, what do you think? Do you think it's realistic to expect a person who's not fully in love with your toddler to put that much effort into reading the signals to do it with that kind of passion that you would?
I guess you can't.
I'm not sure it's reasonable to expect it. Now, I think if we had child care helpers who only had to care for 2 toddlers or 3 toddlers, I think they would get so involved that they might be able to do that much closer to what a loving, devoted parent would do. But we have to make the ratio much better than it is now.
In The Irreducible Needs of Children, you make some fascinating observations about limit setting and about nurturing in institutional settings. How do these models relate to parents?
Parents who are away all day find it very tough to come home and be a disciplinarian at the end of the day. And we need to reinforce the fact that discipline is the second most important thing you give to a child. Love comes first, but discipline comes right on its heels. Because if we don't give discipline to children, Selma Freiberg, for instance, said that a child who wasn't disciplined didn't feel loved. And I think that's true, that children need to know how to stop themselves and where the limits are. And if parents don't institute that kind of teaching, which is what discipline means, way back at 8 months when they crawl up to the TV and look around to be sure you're watching, and when they start crawling up the stairs at 1 year and look around to be sure you're there to say no, these kids are saying to you, I need for you to stop me so someday I'll know how to stop myself. And so I think we've got to reinforce parents who are under a lot of stress themselves to see that as a major role for these kids.
It sounds like you're making a major differentiation, though, between discipline and punishment.
Yes, I sure am. I don't think punishment is anything that we can afford any longer. We're living in a violent society, and every time we hit a child or do something out of violence, we're saying violence is the way you settle things. I don't think we can afford that any longer.
One way to think about it is that you need to earn the right to discipline, and you earn it by nurturing your child. And so the brief saying I often try to emphasize is give more and expect more. You give more through your nurturing interactions, through what we call floor time or hangout time. You expect more through your guidance, your limit setting, through the discipline. And do the two together. If you do one alone, if you give too much, you become indulgent. If you expect too much without giving, you're too demanding, and you may get punitive because the child won't do what you want because the child is angry at you all the time. And then you get into a power struggle. So when people recommend punitive discipline approaches, often I find they're not nurturing enough. And when people have undisciplined kids, often it's because they're not doing the two together. So we got to give more and expect more at the same time.
I remember when my kids were young and I would get exasperated with them, I would holler, "I care, that's why I'm telling you can't do this." They didn't appreciate it at the time, however.
They understood the sentiment. They disagreed with the goals.
Right.
We were always told, you know, security comes from children knowing the rules. If the children know where the limits are, they can abide by that and they're a little more comfortable.
I had a college roommate once. I was very sheltered and I thought she was going to be struck by lightning because everything I had been told that I could never do, she did. And so, but I remember at one point she said, "You know, I wish my parents would have told me no."
Really?
Yes. Isn't that amazing that she verbalized that?
You see, but I think the desire to have a parent say no is often a deeper desire to have a parent more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think if we pay attention to that, then we won't get into the only overly punitive way of setting limits. In other words, the way to make up for it is to get more involved and then support and guide together.
That's a good point, Stan.
Well, we're delighted to have had the privilege of talking with these two distinguished physicians, Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan. Thank you both for being with us.
Well, it's fun to talk to you guys and to watch your faces.
That's right. Thank you for having us. And you guys make it easy because you're good reciprocal gestures.
It's so interesting.
We're having a good time. Our gift for our first caller is a copy of Dr. Brazelton and Dr. Greenspan's new book, The Irreducible Needs of Children, What Every Child Must Have to Grow, Learn, and Flourish. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573, and let us know what station you're listening to. We're all over the world now, so we're always happy to know where our listeners are listening. We'd like to send you a copy of this special book. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or call our toll-free number 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's a shortcut address, and it's complete as http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.